This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi, you're listening to Digital Desires, where we explore how technology is changing intimacy. I am Ahmad Fuad Rahmat.
I'm Vizla Kumarisen.
And in the coming weeks, we will be looking at how identity, trust, love, sex, friendships, and belonging are being challenged and redefined in the age of screens and social media. Let's talk about catfishing today, Vizla. This term came up as we were trying to figure out the new internet lexicon with all these new terms coming up to describe new social and interactive patterns. And then catfishing was one of them. But as we looked further into it, we realized that, well, this isn't just another label to a kind of relationship. It's a broader phenomenon, and it's becoming a real legal, ethical issue now.
Of course, catfish is also very, very popular because there's an MTV show called Catfish. And the host of that show of Catfish is actually the original catfish victim, Nev Schulman. The term first came out in 2010 when they made the film, a documentary film called Catfish. And ironically, it was Nev Schulman who was being video recorded by his older brother. And Nev had befriended a girl called Abby Pierce online. And Abby Pierce started sending him portraits that she had painted. And soon, Nev became friends with all the members of Abby's family, friends online, of course. And this included her mother, her father, and her attractive older sister named Megan. And very shortly after that, Nev and Megan developed an online relationship. So Nev, when egged on by his older brother, decided to travel to Abby's hometown to meet Megan. And when he went there, through a series of different events, they realized that Megan doesn't exist. Actually, Abby exists, but not the version that he knew online. And the person who was he was actually having these online relationships with, particularly his romantic relationship, was Abby's mother, Angela.
So, just to be clear on the scenario here, it was quite an elaborate concoction because you have behind Megan a few different catfishers trying to play with Nev. Is that
what happened? No, it was just the one catfish and it was Megan's mother.
Okay.
But you know, she had to come up with an elaborate story. So even when Nev showed up at her house and asked to meet with Megan, Angela made up the story that Megan was in rehab. And then shortly after that, you know, Nev got a message from Megan apologizing that she's not there, and was telling him that she wants to get help, that she can't meet him and things like that. And then when Nev actually confronted Angela, she told him the truth.
You know, I guess we're clear now roughly on what happens during catfishing. There is a fabricated personality.
Yes.
Right?
And someone creates a fake profile or fake personality or persona.
In order to tempt or lure somebody into a romantic relationship of some sort. And the ending might not be romantic. They could ask for money. They could do other things, maybe identity theft. But the pretext is often some form of relationship.
Yes, that is always the pretext. And just to reflect a little bit on Angela's case, Angela had actually a fairly sad life. She had to give up quite a lot of her dreams when she married, and then she was sort of homebound because she had two children with disabilities. And the term catfish itself emerged when Nev was having a conversation with Angela's husband about the whole thing. And Angela's husband talked about codfish. Now, cod, apparently, when they're caught, they're not killed in order to maintain their freshness. And what also needs to happen for them to remain fresh is that they have to be active in the tanks that they are kept in. If kept alone, the codfish actually become very inactive. And so what fishermen found was that when they put a catfish into the tank with this cod, it actually increased the cod's activity and it resulted in better freshness for the fish.
So that says a lot about the dynamic that is usually played out in catfishing. The idea is that the victim, the catfished, has to be continuously stimulated.
Yes.
Right? And the thrill, it sounds like, comes from that ebb and flow. The catfisher coming up with all these images, these narratives about his or her personality, while the victim continuously is drawn. And this goes on for an extended period of time. There's so many things here. I mean, I'm just, light bulbs are just flashing in my head right now. I got so many questions. But what struck me in that story, right, because it's so emblematic of the problem, is Ned's tenacity. It's not that Angela had this game in her mind, but that Ned was willing to go that far, right? And to the extent of giving her one benefit of the doubt after the other. Is that a common story in a lot of these catfishing cases, or is that just the one that's more, I guess, film worthy? I mean, how common is Ned's story there?
Yeah, so the documentary film itself is fairly controversial. Many of the critics raise exactly the same issue, that Nev went on with it for the sake of making a film because he knew he was being filmed and there was already a plan to make a film. Mm-hmm. So he actively went along. We don't know how much he doubted or guessed even before this happened, right? But in real life cases, I think there is a specific tactic that's used to maintain this relationship between the catfish and the victim, for the lack of a better word. And then it's one of user and used. That's how it usually emerges.
Yeah. I guess one of the other question is why this happens, right? In the usual case that we would often think about, there's always some kind of scamming involved. But this case, and perhaps even other cases that you've come across, shows that it's not really motivated by some kind of tangible reward in the end, right? The game is played in the back and forth, in how much you can perform this so-called persona better, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why do it? I mean, you're a clinical psychologist. What comes to mind when you look at the cases of these catfishers? What tempts them to go on knowing, too, that they will hurt somebody, knowing, too, that it's a lie?
Well, actually, I was very curious about that. And then the more I read about it, I realized that I couldn't be objective about it. So I started looking at people who told their stories of being catfished. And a lot of the times, it turns out that somehow or another, they knew the catfish. So there was this sense that the catfish was actually seeking revenge. There was a case where this woman was catfished by her ex-boyfriend's ex-girlfriend. No idea what she wanted, but you know, she invested all this time, this effort to really hurt this woman. And the other thing is that people know that they can take advantage of other people's vulnerabilities, and they do that because the internet, as we always say, offers so much space to hide.
Part of it is that feeling of being powerful, right? You're in control of a story. And you can be someone else in this story, someone else perhaps more interesting than the person you actually are. And that, I guess, invigorates certain people.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, many of the catfish, they put up profiles as models. And of course, as someone who is an ordinary person, and all of us are, when we get attention from someone who looks good, someone who is famous, someone who's glamorous, and here they are chatting with us, we feel good. And we maybe know that it might be too good to be true, but we don't want to let go of that temporary feeling of, you know, that temporary good feeling to stop and question it.
That's an interesting point. I sense too, let's just give Nev the benefit of the doubt that he was really an earnest lover and that he wanted to dedicate himself to this relationship, this virtual relationship. He risks being hurt, is willing to be so patient, so on and so forth. You wonder the thought process, right? I'm sure as any thinking person living in this digital age, even 2010, some doubts crept up. Is this true? Is this not? Right? But like you said, there is at that crossroads this willingness to believe, right?
Absolutely.
So that's the interesting part to me. But let's take a break for now. I want to probe further on the many dimensions of catfishing, which is essentially living a lie online through fabricated profiles, new names, new personas in order to be in fake romantic relationships. Yes, it's as interesting as it sounds. So stay tuned and we'll be right back. This is Digital Desires. I'm Ahmad Fuad Rahmat alongside Vizla Kumarisan on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to Digital Desires. I'm Ahmad Fuad Rahmat alongside Vizla Kumarisan as usual. And we are discussing today catfishing, the increasingly popular phenomena, I suppose, of fabricated profiles and the romances based around them. Basically, people faking personalities, faking elaborate narratives and characters online in order to lure people to be in some relationship with them, typically romantic. Sometimes there's a scam at the end, they get money or they get some kind of benefit, but oftentimes it's just for the thrill of the chase. So in the first part of the show, we laid out the problems and the key issues through this one very famous example of Nev Schulman. And this has become, I guess, like a broad framework to understand what happens. One of the things that I guess struck me was the conditions that is needed for this to happen. First of all, there must be a significant degree of anonymity. I mean, the catfisher and the catfished can't know each other, and they can't be of the same, I guess, circle. They can't be of the same, maybe even location. And that on the victim and the receiving end, there must be a significant enough sense of isolation to want to play with it. So I'm thinking back to our context, right, where everybody's sort of connected to one another. We have Facebook, everybody's got some kind of mutual friend. And say if you meet somebody online, it's not that difficult to ask around, right? When you get the occupation, especially if you're on radio, right? So how many stations are there in Klang Valley, for example? You just ask for the occupation, you ask for maybe the company they work with, and you ask for the kind of things they do, and you kind of start figuring out the clues around this person's personality. You can kind of just do the personality check. But in a country that's bigger, and a culture that's more individualistic, maybe those 6 degrees of separation are harder to find, right? So I guess I'm trying to figure out what enables this tug of war between them.
I don't know if it's individualistic versus collectivist differences, but it's the naivety, I think, that comes, that's the most important. I mean, the whole catfish phenomena, the MTV show, it's based in America. And if you watch some of the episodes, you will be surprised for the kinds of things people fall for. Mm-hmm. I think there was one person who thought that they were being in an online relationship with a rap artist, a very famous rap artist.
Bow Wow, right?
Bow Wow. And another person who thought that they were in a relationship with famous beauty queen as well. People do tend to fall for these things, perhaps because, like I said, they enjoy the attention. They might, in the back of their minds, know that there is doubt or there should be doubt, but they don't want to let go of that good feeling for that moment. The other thing is that people are lonely. A lot of the stories I've read, it seems that the catfisher preys on certain aspects of human experience. Sympathy, for example. The typical profile of the catfish, they befriend a person online. They have these intense chat sessions where they really share a lot about each other. They show empathy, they show caring. They know exactly the right kinds of words to use. And very quickly, they are sharing personal stories. Of course, it's not their stories. It's completely made up. But they're sharing stories of trauma where they are inducing in the other person a sense that they are trusted, and then a sense of sympathy, sadness. So, you know, they're really preying on those very human elements that connect us as people. In many of the cases, sadly, they abuse that kindness shown by the catfished or the victim to extort money, gifts, things, you know, whatever it is. But basically, it's just to cheat the other person.
Yeah. There are different levels then, right? On one hand, you have the thrill of the chase for the catfisher. But on the other hand, you have people soliciting ultimately some kind of favor or money, right? I mean, I'm thinking of that kind of random email I get from a Nigerian prince. I mean, is that what it looks like? Could that be a potential catfishing saga there? Or if I was, say, naive, is that sort of the gateway? Or,
well, I don't know if that's a potential catfish, but some of the websites I looked at for you know, how to spot the catfish. Mm-hmm. That's one of the warning signs, mm-hmm. what they call the Nigerian 419 scams. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if you get one of those emails, it says, you know, don't reply. Mm-hmm. You might get an email about a single father who wants to meet you or is looking for connection or any of those things. Mm-hmm. That's a potential scam.
So much of social media use is built around fun. Mm. Right, so we engage with Facebook. I mean, that's the whole debate around why can't we have a dislike button? Because you don't want the dislike mood to take over, right? Although now they've moved to sad and angry, I guess emotionally it's maturing. But fundamentally, though, they still want to keep it a cheerful space, right? And I think that may cultivate also in this line a certain kind of like a false sense of security.
It is an illusion.
Yeah, it is an illusion because life isn't this kind of endless continuous series of likes. So when you interact with people and then the mood is already set in such a way where the default orientation is joyfulness, then it's often easy for people to kind of work with that. I'm thinking as well, like a lot of the cases that you talked about how easy it is for people to create these fake narratives, I imagine was something of the ICQ and IRC age, where it was so hard. There wasn't even Google at that point. Sending a photo, it was such a chore because the files were so huge, right? So you even had to like subscribe for extra storage on Hotmail, I remember, you know, back in the day. So it was harder to just fact check somebody's name. Whereas today, if somebody tells you their first name and their last name, their occupation, right? It's not that difficult. I mean, employees, human resources do this, right? When they get a job applicant, they just Google the person just to do a rough background check. So one would think that as the virtual space becomes more fluid, you know, that it's harder to just double check somebody's personality. So why doesn't that happen?
I think because the virtual space is more fluid, it's not difficult to set up fake profiles. On Facebook, on Instagram, any of these platforms, it's not difficult to set up a fake profile. And if you Google someone, the first hit is usually the Facebook page. And if you go through enough pictures, the Facebook page, you know, you see enough number of friends or whatever it is, right? You would think that this person is real. And the more, for the lack of a better word, professional catfish, are elaborate enough to set up all these things, and people don't think twice about it.
Could we possibly be blaming social media too much? Because I imagine before the age of internet and digital technology, people were lying about relationships all the time. In fact, just to think out loud, one could even fake a real profile, I mean, real narrative, because the chances of checking and catching these people would be harder because back then media and information travels so much slower, right? So how unique is catfishing today? I mean, are we unnecessarily underscoring its novelty, right? Is it just something that's already happened before the age of this technology that is just taking a new form?
Right? I think the MTV show Catfish has created that word. But I think the phenomena has lasted perhaps before that. And in this part of the world, we might even know it in another way. Around Valentine's Day, the Australian government actually went on a widespread education campaign to make people alert about falling for online scams. So they knew that, you know, it's Valentine's Day, people are upset, people might be alone and far more vulnerable. And there was It's a big enough issue that the Australian government is launching like an ad campaign, is taking out full-page ads in newspapers to educate people about this. So it is a problem. And we see it even in Malaysia. I mean, how many times have we seen Michael Chong from MCA have press conferences about people who've been cheated of money online?
Yeah. That was the kind of, the tacit joke, right, in the 90s about traveling salesmen and pilots. They live all these different, because, you know, at that time, flying was quite a luxury, right? So if you're traveling salesman or pilot, there's a lot more like mystery around the things you do. And of course, lo and behold, sometimes you hear about other families that they keep. But you're right, that tendency has always been there, but now the intensity is quite noteworthy, right?
And the platforms that are available for that. There are no official statistics about catfish, but we do have some breakdowns from the show itself. So the show is quite popular. It's just been renewed for a new season, and the host, Neff Schulman, has just published his own book. You know, it's a cultural phenomenon of its own. And from the show's statistics, 64% of the catfish or the catfishers have been female, and 53% of the victims have also been female. Mm-hmm. So you're seeing here a predominantly female problem. So I don't know if it's a case of perhaps more women are writing into the show or what it is, but it's the statistics around women are it's quite surprising. Tell you the truth, I was expecting more men to be catfishers. Mm-hmm. And the women who are catfish are far more likely than men to pretend to be the opposite gender.
In other words, it would not be unusual for the female catfisher to pretend to be a man.
Yes, most often it is the female catfisher who's pretending to be a man and is in an online relationship with a woman.
I know that the statistics aren't exhaustive, but what does your instincts tell you as a feminist, as a clinical psychologist? Is there much significance to that, or is it just an interesting kind of side note?
It is interesting. Thinking about that, it is possible that the internet provides an avenue for women or even either minority groups to have some access to power and to exercise power. And it's, of course, a terrible thing to do, you know, to hurt another person. Maybe because they don't have power anywhere else, that's where they can get it.
It's also interesting on the receiving end that, again, people are, and maybe this is changing, but there is a sense that there have been enough people who have been tempted enough by this process for it to become a social phenomenon. I think it goes back to the sense of isolation that you mentioned earlier, that we think technology can address, but it actually just worsens.
Yeah, it seems that technology has sort of, you know, widened the gaps between people and makes people more lonely. And with terms to how significant of a social phenomenon this is, there's actually an online service for if you suspect you are chatting with a catfish, how to know someone is not a catfish. The website is called socialcatfish.com. It's a paid service, and you can ask them to check on the person you're chatting with, and they will make sure the person is real.
I sense that there are certain indicators that one can look for if one suspects that he or she is in a catfished relationship. What would those be?
Well, there are quite a few. The ones that stand out are, if you think it's too good to be true, it probably is, right? If someone's starting to chat with you and saying they're Katy Perry or Bow Wow or a model or whatever it is. I mean, nothing against models, but
nothing against Katy Perry either.
Nothing against Katy Perry either. But if you think it's too good to be true, it might be a cause for concern. The other thing is, if the person tells you they're a model, that's also something to be a bit more alert about. If the person avoids or refuses to have any form of face-to-face conversation, even if they say they're in different countries, look, there's Skype, there's FaceTime, there are multiple platforms which you can use to have telephone conversations or face-to-face conversations, you can see each other. If they're avoiding that, if they're refusing to do that, it's something that really should raise alarm bells. And if people start to ask you for money or gifts and you don't think that is appropriate. And lastly, you know what? Don't second guess intuition. You know, if your gut says something is wrong, it's probably safer to go with your gut.
But you know, the idea of a Nigerian prince or a model wanting to be your friend is very hard to resist. You know, I can see why people fall into that.
Sure, but you know, Nigerian prince, you can Google them and find out if they really are a prince.
Turns out Nigeria is a republic, so.
Well, there you go.
You can start with that. But you know, I want to talk about desire again, because I think some 30 years into, or not 30 years, but 20 years into the evolution of the internet, we can kind of sober up and say, it's not an alternative to basic human interaction, right? Because in the beginning, there was this euphoria around the fact that, all right, human interaction is much easier now because look at how fast it is. Look at how colorful it is. Look at how much of a spectacle it provides. But at some point, I think we have to ask the difficult question, what now? Human interaction is fraught with risks, and so is the online world. I guess we just can't avoid difficulties in human interaction. I think there's no shortcuts to bonds, right? To good bonds.
Absolutely not. And the aspect of desire that this really plays on is fantasy. The fantasy of actually dating a model, the fantasy of actually dating a prince. It's possible. And of course, people are gullible for that because we're told that that's the ideal.
The flip side to that then is the virtues or the skills, I guess, the interpersonal skills that one loses when one engages in online interaction, right? I mean, I don't think that we can interchange comfort levels easily, right? I think we've discussed this. It's quite the running theme of our conversation so far, that when we get more reliant on online communication, we give up or compromise something of our comforts in real life, right? Is that really what's happening, that when we get tempted by these online fake personas, it's we think it's easier, right? I mean, did you sense that? I mean, again, I guess I go back to why it is that people stick quite loyally to even a fantasy that's easily questioned, you know?
Because the fantasy is constantly fed. Everywhere around us, we get messages that feed into that fantasy. And it comes to the point where I think that is exacerbated with social media. How many people would have posted their photographs of Valentine's dinner with a significant other, photographs of a beautiful bouquet or a gift or any of those things? So it's constantly fed and it's a monster.
On that note, we have to wrap up, but I think we've covered quite a great deal about catfishing, what it's about, and how you can better avoid it. Now, what are we talking about next time?
Next episode, we'll be talking about online shaming, and it's something that we will be exploring with a little bit more depth.
Okay, wonderful. So we'd love to hear from you. If you have things to share, or if you have anecdotes, or if you feel that there are things that we missed out on. So email us at biggerpicture@bfm.my. We also have a Facebook page now, so look up Digital Desires and be sure to like it. Once again, thank you for listening. I'm Ahmad Fuad Rahmat.
I'm Vizla Kumarisen.
And this is BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.